Today's episode is sponsored in part by Modern Mammals, creators of a new hair washing product for men. You can help support Based on a True Story when you use the code BOATSPODCAST at modernmammals.com for 10% off. I've really been enjoying their shampoo light bar as an alternative to traditional shampoo. And I know it's in the name, but honestly, when I first used it, I was surprised at just how light and airy it feels. It reminds me of using a bar of soap for your hair, except it's even better than that because if you're like me, you don't like the residue that some actual bars of soap leave behind. And the shampoo light bar is easy to wash out without leaving any residue behind. Modern Mammals also focuses on creating products that help you keep your hair's natural oils so it's not left feeling poofy and frizzy. Go to modernmammals.com and use code BOATSPODCAST for 10% off. Again, that's modernmammals.com for 10% off with promo code BOATSPODCAST. Don't forget to use the promo code BOATSPODCAST so they know I sent you. Thanks, Modern Mammals. Okay, let's start today's episode. Hello, and welcome to Based on a True Story, the podcast that compares your favorite Hollywood movies with history. In this episode of Boats This Week, we'll look at how movies depicted historical events that happened between May 22nd and May 28th. Let's get into it. May 23rd, 1430, Compiègne, France. We're immediately thrown into the action without a lot of time to digest what's happening. In the context of the movie, this makes sense. But as we're just focusing on this one event, let's pause the movie for a moment to understand what's happening here. The camera is looking through a gate of some kind, probably a castle or city walls. I'm guessing that based simply on the fact that we can see a drawbridge in the view. Right in the center of the drawbridge is a woman riding a horse. In one hand, she's holding a flagpole, with the other on the reins of her armored horse. She's rushing straight towards the camera, followed by a few heavily armored soldiers carrying swords. They all seem to be running away from hordes of what I can assume are enemy soldiers, battling them on both the left and right sides of the camera. If we play the movie again, we can see a little easier that it's Mila Jovovich's character. She screams out, "No!" as the gate just in front of the camera comes crashing down, barring the woman and her fellow soldiers from entering into the safety of the castle. She turns around to see her soldiers fighting to hold back the advancing enemy. One of the men on the other side of the gate turns, ordering the man in charge of the gate to open it and let her inside. He refuses, saying he can't risk the safety of the town. So maybe it's not a castle, maybe it's city walls. He screams in frustration at the betrayal. Turning back to the woman on the horse, she hands him the flagpole with its banner attached to it. Then she draws her sword and turns around to face the enemy. Some of her soldiers are stabbed, throats slit. The scene turns to slow motion as she continues swinging her sword at the enemy from her horse. Then a hand reaches up from behind her and pulls her from the horse. At this point, the scene cuts to what seems to be a flashback of her in an empty field lying on her back. Or maybe it's a vision because time is moving very fast as she whispers, "My lord." This comes from the 1999 movie called The Messenger, the story of Joan of Arc with Mila Jovovich in the lead role. While this depiction is highly dramatized, it is true that Joan of Arc was captured this week in history during a battle in Compiègne, France. All this took place during what we now know as the Hundred Years' War between France and England. And the movie is correct to show Joan of Arc being refused entry. But was she betrayed, like we see happening in the movie? Maybe. Maybe not. It's nearly impossible to know the details of exactly what happened back in 1430. And this is one of those moments in history that still gets debated today. What we do know is that the city of Compiègne was under siege by soldiers under the command of John of Luxembourg. He was a captain for the Duke of Burgundy, who was allied with the English. So even though Burgundy is a region in France today, back then the region was allied with the English during the war between the French and English. Joan managed to sneak into the city and then tried to start repelling the sieging forces. That didn't work out, though, because there were way more Burgundians than French. Knowing that they couldn't hold out for long, the soldiers under Joan's command fought against Luxembourg's men to hold them off while the citizens fled to safety. Joan's own escape route, though, was cut off. She did try to get back into the city, but the city gates were closed. And that's how we see the betrayal happening in the movie, when someone inside closes the gates and refuses to open them again. That would be the governor of Compiègne. And we don't really know if he ordered the gate closed purposely to get Joan of Arc captured. Some historians have suggested that perhaps the gate was closed simply because the enemy was outside and they didn't want the enemy to enter the city. It would make sense. Whatever the reason, though, Joan was not able to get into the city, and that meant any French outside the wall had nowhere to go. Very similar to what we see in the movie, Joan was pulled down from her horse and captured by the Burgundians. They then sold her to the English, where she was put on trial for heresy. Oh, and the visions that we see happening in the movie, well, we don't know if those exact visions were a thing. It is true that Joan of Arc claimed to see visions of various saints and hear divine voices. In fact, her visions were used against her in the English trial. That was a show trial. Everyone knew what the result would be. She died almost exactly a year later because the anniversary of her execution is next week. Joan of Arc was burned at the stake on May 30th, 1431, at the age of 19. If you want to watch the event that happened this week in history, though, check out the 1999 movie called The Messenger, the story of Joan of Arc. And the day's events start at about an hour and 56 minutes into the film. As I'm recording this right now, on the other side of my door is my cat. He's always wherever I am as I'm working on the podcast. He watches all the movies with me, and he lets me know when it's time to stop working by sitting on my keyboard. I love the little guy. And as a pet owner, that means there are expenses like vet bills that can pop up, and sometimes it's unexpected. That's why I was happy to learn about today's sponsor, EarnIn, because they can help make sure that I've got the money to cover those unexpected vet bills. EarnIn is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. Now you can join over 3.5 million customers. Get the peace of mind that comes with EarnIn. Download EarnIn today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the EarnIn app, type in True Story under podcast when you sign up. It'll really help the show. True Story under podcast. EarnIn is a financial technology company, not a bank. Subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. Thanks, EarnIn. May 23rd, 1934, Louisiana. A man and a woman are smiling at each other as they walk down the sidewalk. A sign behind them reads, Department of Water and Power, Arcadia, Louisiana. They're each holding a brown bag filled with groceries and they walk towards their white car. He opens the back door and puts his bag in the back seat first, and then she does the same with the bag that she was carrying. Then they both get in the car. She's on the passenger side and he's on the driver's side, but he leaves the door open. They're not ready to go yet. They're waiting for someone else, but the third companion doesn't seem to be showing up. She gets out to go get the third guy who's across the street at the hardware store. And just then, a sheriff's car pulls up. The driver slowly closes his door as one of the officers gets out. Then he backs up and picks up the woman, calling her Gladys Jean. She seems confused by this until the driver nods back at the sheriff's car. Then she notices it and hops in the passenger side and they drive off. The camera cuts to the third guy, Michael J. Pollard's character, who seems relieved to see Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway's characters drive away. In the next shot, we can see a man pulling off the wheel of his truck. The camera cuts to the man and woman driving down the road. And actually, let's do something different here, because there is a second movie that depicts this exact same event. So we're going to pick up in a completely different movie with the man and woman in the car. We can also see the man working on his pickup truck as well in this new movie, although they're all played by different actors, of course, since this is a different movie. And in this movie, we can see something new. armed lawmen hiding in the brush on the other side of the broken down truck. Some of them are loading their rifles. Others are just checking to make sure their weapons are ready to go. There's complete silence for a moment. One of the older lawmen, played by Woody Harrelson, hands some binoculars to a younger, nervous-looking man. He tells the younger man that he has to identify these two. You don't have to pull the trigger. Just identify them. He says he'll be all right. They continue waiting in silence for a little while longer until the older lawman, or another older lawman, I should say, Kevin Costner's character, gives them an order. He says he'll present himself first. You stay in the blind and you fire on my command. Woody Harrelson's character questions this, but it's an order. More waiting in silence. Finally, a car can be seen driving down the dirt road. Everyone stands up. A man in overalls goes out by the broken down truck, while the younger man with binoculars jumps up to look through them at the car driving down the road. Yeah, it's Clyde. This is it, he announces. The car stops for the man wearing overalls by the broken down truck. From inside the car, the driver asks if he needs some help with the truck. There's a woman in the passenger side too, just like we saw in the other movie. Then, from the other side of the road, Kevin Costner's character gets up and walks out, carrying a shotgun. The man in overalls notices him and jumps back. This makes the two in the car notice him too. Stick him up, the lawman says, raising his shotgun. There's a brief moment of tension. Inside the car, we can see the two put their hands on their own guns. The rest of the lawmen stand up now, raising their guns, and there's another brief moment of tension. With wide eyes, the two in the car pause for a moment. Then she looks down at the gun. Everyone opens fire. In a hail of bullets, the two in the car are killed almost immediately. The ambushers don't stop firing, though, and they keep going. During the constant barrage, the driver's foot slips off the brake pedal and the car slowly moves forward for a while before stopping in the ditch by the road. This comes from the 2019 movie called The Highwaymen, and the other movie that we opened this event with is 1967's Bonnie and Clyde. They're both telling different sides of the same event that happened this week in history, the ambush of Bonnie Parker and Clyde Barrow. The Bonnie and Clyde movie tells the story more from the perspective of the two outlaws, Clyde being played by Warren Beatty and Bonnie being played by Faye Dunaway, while The Highwaymen focuses more on the two lawmen who led the charge to capture them. That would be Woody Harrelson's character, Manny Galt, and Kevin Costner's character, Frank Hamer. And it is true that Frank Hamer and Manny Galt were two of the six lawmen who were involved in the ambush that day. Michael J. Pollard's character in the Bonnie and Clyde movie that we see being relieved when the two drive away is named C.W. Moss, and he is a fictional character. Well, he's a composite character, really, of some of the members of the Barrow gang, W.D. Jones and Henry Methvin. The latter of those, Henry Methvin, was the son of Ivy Methvin, and he was the guy wearing overalls next to the broken down truck in both movies. To help the law bring down Bonnie and Clyde, they convinced Ivy that Henry would not get the death penalty for his role in the murders of two police officers in Grapevine, Texas, that happened on April 1st, 1934. And we learned a bit about that back on episode number 237 of Based on a True Story during the week that that event happened. So Ivy agreed to help the law. There's still some debate about whether or not Henry knew about this deal at all, though. But the plan was for Ivy to pretend like his truck was broken down along a road where Bonnie and Clyde would be driving. Since the pair knew Ivy, there was a strong likelihood that they would stop to help. And that's what we see happen in both movies, and that is exactly what really happened. Although, The Highwaymen got the ambush done more accurately than the Bonnie and Clyde movie. For example, in the Bonnie and Clyde movie, we see Clyde get out of the car, and then with the driver's side door open, Bonnie kind of hangs out the side as the car gets sprayed with bullets. That didn't happen at all. Clyde never got out of the car. When I talked to historian John Neal Phillips about the movie, he said one of the deputies was so nervous that he jumped up before the signal was given and fired off two shots. Another of the lawmen saw Clyde's head snap back, meaning he was probably killed right then. But with the element of surprise gone, The lawmen opened fire. They fired over 100 shots into the car, with Bonnie and Clyde being hit dozens of times, 26 for Bonnie, 17 for Clyde, according to the coroner's statement. But some others have said the real number was more than 50 each. In either case, they're not survivable numbers. If you want to watch the event that happened this week in history, you can watch the 1967 Bonnie and Clyde movie. The day begins at about an hour and 44 minutes into the film. And we stopped here. We stopped that movie here at about an hour and 47 minutes and 10 seconds. That's 5 seconds before the ambush itself starts. And then we switched over to 2019's The Highwayman, where the ambush begins at an hour and 52 minutes into the movie. And if you want to get a much more thorough look at the true story, I mentioned chatting with John Neal Phillips. He was the historical consultant on 2019's The Highwayman, which we talked about back on episode number 178 of Based on a True Story. That covers the laws side of things. Then he came back on the show to chat about 1967's Bonnie and Clyde to dig into the true story from the perspective of the two outlaws. That is episode number 195 of Based on a True Story. So together, you'll get all the details about Bonnie and Clyde. Oh, and he also shared some stories from the set of how they recreated the ambush scene in The Highwayman. March 26th, 1940, Dunkirk, France. 5 British soldiers look up to see countless papers floating down from the sky. The town seems to be deserted, and every so often, one or two of the soldiers peel off from the rest to check the buildings for something. One of the soldiers grabs a few pieces of the paper flying from the air, and they're all the same. It's kind of like one of those "you are here" maps that you'll find at various places, but this one is quite an ominous one. At the top of the map, there's some water indicated, and then everything beneath it is red, except for a spot in the middle that says "you." And there are arrows pointing towards "you" from the red area of the map. And in that area, it says, "we surround you." At the bottom, there are two words: surrender, survive. Another of the soldiers gives an indication for what they're checking the buildings for as he tries picking up a hose to wring out anything left into his mouth. There's only a few drops. The silence is broken by gunshots. The soldiers start running down the street. One of them is hit. Then another, and another, and another. The last soldier manages to make it over a gate into someone's backyard. The gunshots follow, and he runs to the other side of the yard into a different street. On that side, even more gunshots erupt as people shoot at him. He yells at them, saying he's English, and the gunshots stop. These must be friendly soldiers. He runs to the barricade, a French soldier helping him over the sandbags that are piled up. Once he's on the other side, gunshots start from behind him, and the defending soldiers return fire. He runs down the street until it opens up to a sandy beach. There are thousands of other soldiers on the beach, all lined up with nowhere to go. They're blocked by the water beyond the beach that stretches as far as the eye can see. This sequence comes from the 2017 movie Dunkirk, and right away, I'll point out that it might not be something that happened this week in history. The reason that I say that is because by the time that last soldier, his character's name is Tommy in the film, by the time Tommy reaches the beach, we can see the soldiers are already there on the beach. Has the evacuation already started? Maybe, maybe not. The film is a little ambiguous about the specific date. With that said, though, since the point of the entire film is the Dunkirk evacuation, and this is how the movie starts, I'm going to guess that this day is either May 26th or May 27th, 1940. Now, I know I mentioned the date as May 26th at the beginning of this segment, and I did that because that's when the evacuation began. But many refer to May 27th as the start of it because that was actually the first full day of the evacuation. In either case, we know that it was this week in history that Operation Dynamo began. That's the name of the operation that history often remembers as the Miracle of Dunkirk. Of course, they didn't know it was going to be a miracle when they first got underway. Churchill ordered the operation to begin on May 26th, and it was expected to last about 2 days. They hoped to get maybe 45,000 of the troops across the English Channel to safety before the Germans overran the remaining forces. What they didn't know was that Hitler ordered his panzers to halt. Maybe he thought the Luftwaffe could kill the men on the beaches without any losses of their own. Maybe he thought that they would counterattack. we don't really know the reason why, but we do know that allowed an operation that the British originally thought might save 45,000 over the course of 2 days, but it ended up saving the lives of 338,226 people in 9 days. That's why after the operation ended on June 4th, 1940, Winston Churchill had his famous "We shall never surrender" speech. Here is the part of that speech where he calls what happened at Dunkirk a miracle.
A miracle of deliverance achieved by valor, by perseverance, by perfect discipline, by faultless service, by resource, by skill, by unconquerable fidelity, is manifest to us all. The enemy was hurled back by the retreating British troops. He was so roughly handled that he did not carry their departure seriously. Sir, we must be very careful not to assign to this deliverance the attributes of a victory. Wars are not won by evacuations. But there was a victory inside this deliverance, which should be noted. It was gained by the Air Force. Many of our soldiers coming back have not seen the Air Force at work. They saw only the bombers, which escaped its protective attack. They underrate its achievements. I've heard much talk of this, and that is why I go out of my way to say this.
If you want to watch the event that began This Week in History, I'd really just recommend watching the entire 2017 Dunkirk movie. Once you've done that, I had a chat with the historical consultant on the film, Joshua Levine, back on episode number 204 of Based on a True Story. Oh, and if you happen to catch the video version of my chat with Joshua on YouTube, you can see him showing a side-by-side of the map that we see falling at the beginning of the movie. He shows the actual one compared with the one that they made easier to read for the film. This episode of Based on a True Story This Week was written and produced by me, Dan Lefebvre. If you're still looking for some historical recommendations for things to watch this week, here are a few birthdays of people who have been mentioned in movies or TV shows. On May 22nd, 1859, Arthur Conan Doyle was born in Edinburgh, Scotland. He is best known as the author of Sherlock Holmes, and while there have been plenty of Sherlock Holmes movies, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle himself has been portrayed in a number of movies and TV shows as well, including the 2016 miniseries called Houdini and Doyle. Or if you want to watch a movie that we've covered here on Based on a True Story, check out the 2004 movie called Finding Neverland. We covered that on episode number 119 of Based on a True Story. And in all fairness, that's actually about the author of Peter Pan. But Sir Arthur Conan Doyle is played by Ian Hart in that film, so it'd be a good option to watch this week too. On May 24th, 1819, Alexandrina Victoria was born in London, England. She's better known as Queen Victoria, as she was the Queen of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Ireland from 1837 until her death in 1901. And if you're looking to watch something about her, I would recommend the PBS series simply called Victoria. On May 26th, 1926, Miles Davis was born in Alton, Illinois. He was the famous jazz musician, and his story was portrayed on screen in the 2015 film called Miles Ahead, where he's played by Don Cheadle. So, to recap, the movies and TV series that we learned about this week are 1999's The Messenger, the story of Joan of Arc, 1967's Bonnie and Clyde, as well as 2019's The Highwayman, 2017's Dunkirk, 2016's Houdini and Doyle, as well as 2004's Finding Neverland, 2016's Victoria, and last but certainly not least, 2015's Miles Ahead. If you check out any of those this week, or if you want to chat about any of your favorite movies and history, you can join the Based on a True Story Discord community to let me know what you think. Join for free over at basedonatruestorypodcast.com/discord. And if you get value out of Based on a True Story, you can give back whatever value you feel it's worth, whether it's a dollar, $10, $100, whatever value you get out of the show, you can give back and learn how to get ad-free versions of the show over at basedonatruestorypodcast.com/support. Until next time, thanks so much for listening, and I'll chat with you again really soon.